Hello, everybody, and welcome to Brewer's Choice, a podcast from Brewer to Screw It. I'm your host, Cody. This is an interview podcast where I'll be sitting down with members of the community. Laz will come on every now and then, and we'll, you know, just talk about magic, how people got into magic, things like that. It's going to be a great time. And today, for my first ever episode, we have Brian, the unskilled commander.
Hello, everyone. I'm honored to be the first guest, first of all. Thank you for that. And it's cool to be here.
So, Brian, what is the unskilled commander?
Right. So the name comes from the fact that I'm not the best at magic, even though I've been playing for quite some time. I was always losing it with my friends in pods and stuff like that. And it got a little frustrating. And, so first couple games of every night, fine, who cares? You're laughing, you're having fun. When I'm on game four or five and I've lost every single one, the salt starts to creep in. So the unskilled commander was created for out of two reasons. One was to actually try and get better at magic and deck building, figuring out what my weaknesses are and where to fix them, which is how I started playing four of my decks against themselves by myself, because that way I could see all the cards as opposed to, like, especially if I play a five or six player game, you don't get to see any of your cards, really. You get like a couple. I wanted to actually see the cards and see how they interacted with each other. The other bigger reason that I created it was because for the last 14 years, I've participated in Extra Life, which is a 24-hour gaming marathon charity that raises money for Children's Miracle Network hospitals nationwide. But when you sign up, you get to do specifically to the hospital you choose. So when you raise money, excuse me, whenever I raise money for my local children's hospital. And it's always been a lot of fun. I donate to myself every year, and my friends, especially in the beginning, were great. But when you do something like that for 14 years, you really can't expect your friends to always donate every single year. sorry. I like to tell people that charity is very personal. You know, just because they're not donating to me does not mean someone's not being charitable. They might do something for cancer awareness every year, or animal shelters, or veterans, or, you know, trans rights, or anything like that. So I can't get upset that someone doesn't have the money to donate to me. So I want to always look for different avenues to find for donations. And I thought, and whenever I'm looking at the, you know, the quote unquote high scores every year for Extra Life, you know, the people that place at the top, they're always donations of $5, $20, $10, $10, $5, $15. I'm like, it's not like a corporation giving them $10,000. And I realized they were streamers and, you know, people doing things like that. So I thought, well, if I can find something that I'd like to do, then I could use that on YouTube and then eventually Twitch to be the same thing, to have another avenue throughout the year to gain some extra donations. So I was like, when I started playing my decks against themselves to try and get better, I was like, hey, this is something I could film and put out there, as goofy as it is. It's like a little niche portion of magic, and it would benefit me, but I could also eventually grow a community and hopefully use it for charity. So that's what the Unskilled Commander is all about.
Yeah, and I think, like, one thing that's really cool, and like the reason I really started watching your YouTube shows, episodes, after we met playing on a stream game, is, like, as someone who's like, I love deck building, like deck building is my favorite part of magic, seeing someone like take four decks that they have built and brewed and all that and play them against each other is such a unique way of, like, finding out, like, your, because, like, a big reason we started Brewer to Screw It was because, like, we were blowing too much money on, like, just building random decks and then, like, playing them once and hating them. And so I'm sure by doing this, you found some decks where you, like, you put it together and, like, the idea is sound, but then you play them in paper and you're like, I don't enjoy this play style. So has that happened?
I've torn apart quite a few decks since starting the channel, and I've grown a lot more too, of the more decks rather, because at one point I did realize, well, I need to have more content, and it, as you just said, it's too expensive to try and build a true real deck. And I finally dawned on me, it's like, well, I've got a 3-row card box of bulk. Let me just build a deck literally out of what I own currently. And then, so it's almost like a sub bracket for the channel. So I can pit like the weaker decks against themselves. And over time, if any of those really seem to be fun or have the keep sparking the creativity, then I can upgrade them into, you know, real boy status and like an actual deck that I would take to a stream or something, like, or to go against friends. So now I have like probably closer to 30 commander decks, but not all of them are like, yeah, it's more like 20 some, probably 22 ish that I take to friends or streams. And then the other like 8 or so are just little crappy ones that are meant to like learn and just have, be able to have some sort of content while new every time, instead of, okay, here's a slightly different variation of what the episode you saw 3 weeks ago, where there's one deck difference. I'm like, that's not, nobody's going to care about that.
Yeah. We'll talk about it later on, but yeah, like I'm sure as we do podcasting, but then like you do the videos, and like content creation is always about staying fresh and things like that. I didn't want to get too far away from, I just want to say like, it's amazing what you do for Extra Life. I think I saw the other day you said your like lifetime is like over 200,000. Is that what it was? I might be overinflating that. Might be overinflating. It might have been 25,000.
It's so weird that I actually don't remember it offhand. I should. I have like a little success board in my gaming room, because every year, if you do the platinum membership, which is simply just, you know, you give an extra $15 when you sign up, and then you are eligible for the t-shirt and the little silver and gold medals for reaching $500 and $1,000 raised per year. So I've luckily, except for the very first year, I've gotten the gold medal every year. So I have a little not shrine, but a little placard type thing where I have my first 10 years worth of gold medals and then the total across them. And I believe it was $16,000 for the first 10 years, somewhere around there. And I think by now, because I'm always getting like around 1 to 2,000, it's over 20.
Nice. Awesome. That's really awesome. So let's talk about, so how did you get into Magic? Because that's obviously the main focus of your content. I know we're going to talk a little bit later about some hobbies. I can see behind you, you got some figures, and I've seen you talk about comic books. So I'm excited to get to that. But what got you into Magic?
Honestly, just proximity. Years ago, I think it's going on 10 years ago now, I got laid off and from a decent job, and because corporate, you know, some vice president in California decided to automate stuff. So a bunch of my level of job everywhere got cut. So I couldn't get another same level job, even though I had, you know, the degree and experience and stuff. It wasn't easy to find something. I ended up working part time at a really cool comic book shop that's local while I was on like unemployment and stuff, and stayed there for a couple years. But I was like, got, you know, assistant manager and stuff like that. So I kept, even then I was like moving up a little bit, but it was a big enough store that it was a comics shop, which was the focus, because it was part of a 5-store chain in the Pittsburgh area. But they had like a side room, because they were able to like actually break the wall into the store next to them and it's in like a mall when that got vacant. And that's a game room. So they have like board games and stuff, but a ton of tables, and they were had Magic, Friday Night Magic for quite a while. So after a few months of just, you know, watching people play Friday Night Magic, and then on Saturdays, and like the manager played, and, you know, everybody talking about it, you know, I just decided, okay, let me give it a try. And it was, I actually remember this, it was Khans of Tarkir. That was the set where I finally started buying stuff. That the double Khans and Dragons, like that double set, you know. So that's when I started playing. And at the time, I wasn't going crazy into it. I was just buying a few packs and building decks. And the funny part about everything is that even though my content on YouTube is Commander, right? And I play on Commander on people's streams and stuff, I rebelled against Commander tooth and nail, because it hit popularity literally like 3 months after I started playing. So I started playing, people were teaching me. I had a friend, like an actual friend prior, who used to play and said, oh, I still have my decks. I'll come down to the store and help teach you. So he came down and he started hanging out more and more. And then Commander hit and they all jumped ship to Commander. And I'm like, no, I am still learning. I have like 3 new 60 card decks I just built that I want to try and figure out. I don't want to do something brand new that I don't understand. So there was luckily a few people that still held on, and I kept playing a little bit. but it was probably another like 2-3 months later that I finally, they kept going, you got to play, Brian. It's fine. You got to play. And I'm like, fine. And I literally just threw every elf I had together in a green deck. And it was horrible because it was not elf ball at all. It was just what limited elves I had. But then I, you know, because that was basically the only game in town because no one else was playing 60 cards. So I just evolved into that. And I totally enjoy it. It was just the timing of it was funny. It's like, can you give me 5 seconds to learn the first real Magic and then we'll try this new thing that's taken over?
Yeah. And like, so for me, like, I've played Magic twice before I officially got into it. And it was like a buddy made me a mono red goblin deck and I played it for like 5 minutes and was like, I don't think this is for me. And then another time was when I was a child and it was just like, I don't understand what tapping lands does at all. And so I was just looking for a hobby and I knew my buddies played Magic and I was like, well, what do y'all play? And they're like Commander. And so I've learned through Commander, but I can definitely see where like, if you're just learning the game and you're doing like Standard and then someone's like, well, now you got to build a deck out of 100 cards and there can be no duplicate. Like that is such a huge change, I'm sure. So
I'd strongly recommend people learn off of 60 card because simply because by having the multiples of the same card, you have less interactions and less weird, like less things, because like you just said, it's 100, it's 99 cards, you know, okay, well, like 60 comes some cards, you know, after lands. You could literally have every single keyword in that deck. And some of the complexities of those keywords interacting with each other is going to be beyond someone that's literally trying to understand untap, upkeep, draw, and getting the order of those three things right. Yeah, and I don't say that someone learning off of Commander is wrong or stupid by any means. It's just I feel it's easier for someone because there's less steps and there's less complexity of a billion cards interacting. Because like, you know, like I said, if you're building a 60 card deck, you are going to really, it's going to be fine tuned down to a handful of cards, 4 copies of each or 3 copies of each. So it's easier to just get the feel of those handful of cards and what they say and how they interact as opposed to some of the craziness that can get going on in Commander. And then, and like I said, if you are on top of, like, it took me a while to really get the untap, upkeep, draw in the right order. And that's just like literally the first thing you do every turn. And then you were going to throw at them, okay, well, this is going to bounce this and untap that. And when this comes back in, it's going to phase these out. And you know, what? Why am I? And then I just feel that that's going to like turn people off and they're going to be like, I don't care.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And like, I remember my like first time going to an LGS, like I played against a guy who ran a Mindslaver infinite combo. And like, if that was my first time playing the game, I 100% would have been like, no, this is not the game I want to play. But like, luckily I had friends who like, I was playing a pre-con, so they like took it like slow and like worked with me and all that. But yeah, I 100% agree with what you're saying that there is a lot of stuff in Commander that just, it would go crazy. So you've been playing since Cons of Tarkir, which I've heard great things about. I wish I would have gotten Magic a long time ago because like I like watched like Spice 8 Rex video on like the whole Tarkir block. I'm like, God, that seems like such fun to like be playing that at the time. But what has been your favorite set release so far since you've been playing?
Honestly, it's actually I say my number one and two are actually very recent. I'd say my favorite has been Kamigawa Neon Dynasty, followed by Wilds of Eldraine. It's just, I mean, there's so many good cards in most sets and stuff, but no specific set until Kamigawa really grabbed me in terms of like the aesthetic and all the things it could do. You know, I'm a big fan of Japanese history and culture and like the looks, you know, like the shrines and the temples. And of course, the counter side of like anime and all the cool robots and stuff. So then fusing the history of Kamigawa with, you know, the neon punk, cyberpunk aspect, both, I love both sides. So it's like, well, this is just fantastic. And then Wilds of Eldraine, I didn't think I was going to like it because I'm like, oh, it's storybook crap. I don't care. Yeah. But the cards were so fun and the artwork was beautiful. And it was just really great interactions and unique legendaries that, you know, got my creative juices flowing for like new commander. So I'm like, this set is fantastic. So I just bought a bunch of that.
Yeah. My favorite set so far has been March of the Machine, just because I loved I went to a Command Fest for it, and like it was just an amazing experience. But like Wilds of Eldraine, like legitimately was like, it was such a good set, from like the bonus sheet of like all those enchantments to like you said, like really fun and interesting commanders. I was just looking like at building a Gil Wayne deck, and that came from that pre-con from that set. And like just the cards that came from that set were so cool. Like roll tokens were awesome. So yeah, I agree with that one. Kamigawa Neon Dynasty, also really cool. Like I love, like I'm finding cards from that set that like I want to like slot into decks, and so that's awesome.
I still get these weird like desire to like get more collector boosters of Kamigawa. Like it's just be smarter now just to buy singles, but it's like it was such a fun set to open, and like I only either a few packs or like one collector box. And it's like, now I'm like, I should have gotten two or three. It's like, just through the fun of opening like the really good, you know, full arts and foils and stuff.
Are you a big pack cracker? Like, do you like just like,
yeah, I mean, I can't deny that, you know, that little, I mean, call it what it is, that little gambling itch of like the lottery of like, you know, yes, you can just most of the time it'd be smarter and more financially efficient to just buy singles. In even full arts and foils and however you want them to look, just buy the singles. But there's something about cracking that exact card you want for in that $5 pack, and it's like, oh, this is a $20 card and I got the foil, it's gorgeous. You know, okay, it doesn't matter that you spent like 100 and some on the box, but it's just that feeling that like I pulled this card. Like everyone says it. Like talk, when you talk to players, they'll gladly tell you what awesome card they pulled. Because if you call like, oh, you got such and such. Oh, and it's the full art. That's sweet. Oh, yeah, I pulled that in the pack. The first thing they say, you know, because it's just that it just makes it better.
I came from like, I played Yu-Gi-Oh! When I was a kid. And like, it was the same thing. It's like, and maybe back then, like you couldn't even buy singles. It was just like cracking a pack and hoping you pulled like a Blue Eyes White Dragon, things like that. And it's continued into Magic for me, where it's like, I go to the store and it's like, okay, am I gonna get anything good? And like, when I pull Ragavan out of a Mars Machine Collector booster, I'm like, oh my god, like what? And like, it's just like a little bit of gambling addiction, that dopamine hit you get when like it's just nice, it's fun.
Yeah, and I don't know how you want to say it, but it's like I'm either the shiny goblin or the art snob, but I just prefer full arts and or full art foils and stuff. So I just gravitated toward the collector boosters, even though it's stupid and they're way more expensive than I shouldn't. But it's just like, it's, you know, I like that. So I'd much rather get a common in foil that's going to go into my bulk that I'll use for another deck later on than pulling a non-foil. Because, I mean, it's foil now. It's better. It's a little more fun, you know, so.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Like, I definitely prefer to buy collector boosters, and just because I feel like, and it's just, I know like you're paying more, but it also just feels like you get better stuff 95% of the time than like even with these new play boosters. Yeah, so yeah. So outside of cracking packs, obviously, what is it that you love about Magic? What keeps you playing after so many years? Like, because I mean, when did Constark here come out? It was
like shortly after I started working. Well, like, yeah, after I worked there. So we're probably looking at like 8, 9, 10 years.
That's a long time to be dedicated to a hobby. So what keeps you around? What keeps that interest going?
So I'm going to go ahead and say the answer that most people just think: winning. And I don't mean that like I don't ever want to or expect to win every game or half the games. But when you win a game, when your deck does the thing, when your friends are like, oh man, that was sick, how did you pull that off? Or what, it's like, that is a fun feeling. That's what's a game. Like, a game is meant to be won. We are playing this for social interaction and hanging with our friends. Absolutely. But we want to win. Everybody wants to be the winner. So that's probably what keeps me coming back, is whenever I improve and make my decks better and, you know, can hit that once in every 4 games, every 5-game win. That's all I need to keep me going.
Yeah. Yeah, it is probably what I think a lot of people would say that, honestly. I think, you know, it is winning. Like, there's like second, like my favorite thing is deck brewing. And so like, but yeah, I mean, winning and like seeing a deck do the thing is the reason that I think a lot of us play. So totally valid answer there.
And that's from your deck building. I mean, you're building it to do something either big and flashy or hyper specific. So when you see it, that's the dopamine hit. It's like, yeah, you love building it. Is also a dopamine hit, but when you see it, like, oh man, it did it. So all that time I spent building it was worth it. It's like, you know, if you're a go wide deck and if you were the threat with like a ton of tokens and then you only lost because someone hit that board wipe, that's still a pretty good feeling.
So we touched on a little bit early on, but so how long have you been doing content creation in all together?
I started September of 2022. So only about like 2 going on 3 years now.
So what would you say has like been your favorite part about being a content creator in like the Magic sphere?
This will be the stereotypical answer, honestly, but meeting and making friends with other creators and actually finding that there was a community. And I know it's dumb to say, but I never really thought I didn't dawn on me there was. Like, I knew The Professor, Command Zone, I Hate Your Deck, but that's kind of what I thought it was. Like, I'm like, oh yeah, it's these big dogs, these big things, you know? And I didn't think that I was the first person making content about Magic. I understood that there was plenty of people like me, but at the same time, I didn't realize it was a community. And it was probably like almost a full year into my YouTube channel, probably the summer, a little before the summer of last year, 2023, when I found people on Twitter. And I don't even remember what's really sparked it. But I started connecting with people and then suddenly it just blew up and suddenly I'm like following like hundreds of people. I'm like, oh my God. And you know, they're inviting me on their streams. And then like the end of last year, I'm like, this is crazy. This is awesome. And you know, meeting people like you and making actual friendships that not just like, you know, oh yeah, I commented on your post and you liked it or whatever. But it's like, you know, people inviting me back to be on their channels because they enjoyed having me on and stuff like that. That's definitely the best part of, you know, the content creation for me.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Cause like I've been heavily into like Destiny 2 for many years. And like, not that community is like all for anything. It's just like, like you said, there's the big dogs and then there's just like, not really like anyone else. Whereas with Magic, like everyone is so friendly and inviting. And like I remember just randomly commenting on someone's post. They were like, oh, does anyone want to play a Lord of the Rings deck on one of my streams? And I was like, this will never go anywhere. Like, I'll never get invited on. But I was like, oh, hey, I just built a Gandalf the Grey deck. And next thing you know, I'm on the stream playing. And, like, never something I thought would happen. And, like, I thought, like, I'd just be talking to the ether on Twitter. But, like, I've made good friends with you. I've made good friends with other people. And, like, it's amazing how, like, this hobby is, like, it invites people in. And then once they're there, like it keeps you there because you're like, I want to keep talking to these people. I want to keep playing games with these people. And I think Commander is a big part of that because it's like, it is a social format where it helps that you make these bonds with people and talk and joke around and poke fun at each other. Like, I love seeing the stuff on Twitter about people having like blood feuds with each other. But yeah, I 100% agree that is probably the best part about being a quote unquote content creator. Not to get drown it down and dreary, but like, what has been kind of your least favorite aspect of it? You know, I think something a lot of people don't see is that like, sometimes you put a lot of time and effort into this and not everything comes from it that you would hope.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's definitely part of it. But without question, the answer to that without question, the answer is editing. I hate editing. And it's like, and so I'm not a big content creator. I've only got like, I'm just shy of like 400 subscribers on YouTube. I've got a couple hundred on Twitter, etc. So I'm by no stretch of the imagination, a big time one or even middle time, but everything I do is me. It's like, it's just me. I film it. I write it. I script it. I do whatever, for like my shorts and all that. And I just can't stand editing, you know, like there's a part of me that wants to go back to the beginning, because when I first started, it was so half-assed. It was just my iPhone on like this weird wooden rigging with like some pipes going across to hold it up at the right height. And there was no editing. There was no nothing. So I just hit record. And whether it was an hour and a half, 2 hours, sometimes it was me playing the decks, all the pauses of me thinking and trying to talk so it wasn't just dead air. And then I would just literally upload it from my phone straight to YouTube, which was almost like another hour to get that done. And that was it. I walked away. And I was churning out a bunch of them to like stockpile before I went live. So I did a couple months of like filming tons of episodes. And then like the whole rest of that year, when I started 2022, like after like October, those last 3 months, I didn't do anything because I had them all scheduled for the rest of the year. I might have done some shorter form, like 10 minutes or under, like deck techs and stuff like that. But it was easy. Now it's like I film an episode with proper rigging for the most part, get it on the computer that has the editing software. And for an hour long episode, it takes me literally 3 to 4 hours to edit it because I have to cut all the pauses, all the breaths that I don't want people hearing me gasp for air for some stupid reason. Find these cards on Scryfall, put them in, resize them. And it's just like, I put it off so much until I like have to do it. Like I finished one this before we started. And then I have like a whole bunch more I have to finish by the end of the week.
Yeah, so. I can definitely relate to it. I did the editing for the first like 6 months of the podcast. And like, I just always felt like I was doing a terrible job. Like I was like, oh, like our audio is like way too spiky. Like Laz sounds way louder than I do. And like, it bothered me so much to the point that I was like, I reached out to my friend Bobby and I was like, can you please do this? And like, I will pay you like, please. And like, he was like, oh yeah, like I love doing this stuff. And I was like, cool. Cause I don't. And then a few months back, we were like talking about doing YouTube content. And like, I had hooked up OBS and like recorded us playing a game. And like, I sat down in front of the video editor and like, I started working on it. I got like 10 minutes in and I was like, oh, this is a nightmare. Like, I'm going to be here for the next 4 hours. I don't know if I could do this. And it gave me a newfound respect for like what you, like MTG Mutsta, like what all those people do who like have the gameplay channels where it's just like even the voiceovers or anything. Like, I was like, oh my God, like I couldn't. And then like, you look at like the people who have like which you're kind of starting to do this now too, where you just today when we're recording had your first episode go up of like other content creators playing games with you on Spell Table, which is, it was awesome. I loved it. I watched it today at lunch. I love the bit where you're like, hey, if y'all could like not cuss, like it'd be really good. And immediately I was like, oh, okay.
Bam, she drops the F as soon as it's like, oh, of course you did that. Thank you. that was a challenge because I had to teach myself how to do the dub over of me doing the honk to bleep it out. Oh, yeah. I'm like, okay, I think I can understand this. So I'm like, I should be able to cut the audio and just take out the audio, but not the video. And then I just put the audio in from this other file and drag it there. And okay, it's the right, you know, it's like, it wasn't hard, but I'm like, I had to like just figure it out myself.
Major props. I literally sat there for 10 minutes and I was like, I don't think I can do this at all. Like you know, the gasping for breath thing, I'm like, do I just forget to fucking breathe when I'm recording? And then like randomly I just breathe heavily into the mic. That was my other biggest, like, I was like, I can't, like, I hate how much it sounds like I'm breathing into the mic. Like, it is a pet peeve of mine. But yeah.
And it's, and you know, and I think you probably experience this too, but we don't have the money for like high tech equipment. You know, I've gotten a couple extra cameras, but they're not high-end cameras. They're like under $100 each. And what I've seen when doing any research is the same thing. Everyone always says, focus on your audio first. If people can't hear you or it sounds crappy, they're not going to stay and watch. And my audio was always the same thing because I just use like webcams for like meetings, and they would be hung above, aimed down at the table. And those things are like cone-shaped with their receiver, like the mics. So depending on where I was around the table, it would like one side was louder than the other and I'd have to like lean forward. And it always bothered me because it was never quite right. And then finally what I've done now is now I have my headset on and I just like walk around the one side of the table back and forth. So now my audio is constant, but because the mic's right there, it's picking up every single breath and every like lip smack. And I'm like, like every time I hear it, I'm like, cutting out these infinitesimal little like tenth of a second blurbs because I do not want people hearing me like smack my lips in their headsets all the time.
I moved this year and I was in an apartment and like I was in a corner and I was like, okay, like I'm in a corner, I'm facing a wall, like my audio should be decent. No, it was like I was living in like an echo chamber where like anything I did just reverberated and like it was terrible. And like since I've moved, it's been a million times better. But yeah, like that was like a thing we had to sit down and like discuss about. Cause like, it was like, okay, like I want the audio to be better. Do I take the time to like take an editing class and like learn how to make the audio better myself, or is it just more worth it to like let like my friend Bobby, who is editing this now, like he's a trained professional. Hello, Bobby. Thank you so much for all you do. Like it's just worth it to like be like, hey, man, like I will pay you to do this, like because it is easier and like takes a lot of stress off me. And he's been a huge help with it, and like he does amazing things, and I'm so appreciative of that. But yeah, like I'm such an audio snob because like I've been listening to podcasts for years, and like it's like anytime I hear like myself breathing into the mic a tiny bit, I'm like, oh God, why am I like this?
I've gotten to the point where I can actually see the breath in the audio code. Like for the most part, I can see if like there's a very specific little tiny bump of audio. And if it's in the middle of normal audio, I'm like, that's a breath. And then I listen to it, and sure enough, it's me. Blah, blah.
So what are some of your hobbies outside of magic?
Yes, since you know, you can see with through Discord, I love all things comic book for the most part, mainly Marvel. But so I collect figures and like Legos. I've gotten to the point, it doesn't look like it, I have a ton of stuff, multiple bookshelves filled with characters, but I learned to focus it on favorite characters because I used to just collect everything that looked cool, you know, that were like, oh, I had like Spawn figures that were like, you know, because they were McFarlane, so they were beautifully detailed and stuff, but I didn't really care about Spawn. It was just, that was a gorgeous figure. But so I, you know, I've gotten rid of a lot of that stuff, and now I'm focused on like just my favorite characters of like, you know, Spider-Man, Spider-Gwen, Optimus Prime, Megatron, whatever, and things like that. But I'm still a sucker where it's like, well, I have the Lego versions, I have the actual action figures, I have the Funkos, you know? So doesn't quite save me any more money. But
I collected Funko Pops for many years. I had like a collection that was like over $8,000. And like Captain America was like my, like I was like, I'm going to collect all of them. And about a year ago, I was like, I'm just done collecting these. And now trying to sell them, it's like, part of you is like, I don't want to get rid of this, but like, I know, like, I don't have the space for it. And like, I can't, like, I have a new hobby in magic, and like, this is probably like a forever hobby. And so it's like, but yeah, so I took the Funko Pops. Like, literally the joke between our friend group is like, oh, Cody used to work at a GameStop because I would have a wall of Funkos behind me. And so it's like I was in a GameStop store whenever I would like get on and like we would play video games together. You, as you said, you're a huge Marvel fan. What are the hype levels for the Marvel universe's Beyond set for you?
Cautiously optimistic. Now, like based off of what I've seen with Doctor Who and Fallout, and I'm not really fans of either of those. I know of them, but the sets themselves, as a Magic player, they're fantastic. The cards are great, great interactions. I have pieces of both, all of them in my decks. So, and from hearing what the actual fans say, they knocked it out of the park flavor-wise for Doctor Who and Fallout. So I'm hoping they're going to do the same with Marvel. I'm just worried that they might do MCU Marvel. And it's like, well, that's cool. That's not what I want to see. I don't want a card with Chris Evans on it. I want a card with J. Scott Campbell, you know, Captain America, or you know, Mark Brooks, Captain America. Like art. I mean, obviously they're not going to get, they're going to have magic artists do it, which is fine because magic artists are fantastic as well. But that's what I want. I want their version of Cap and Spider-Man, not solely, you know, all about the MCU. So we'll see. Now, supposedly there's like going to be multiple sets, I think, or at least two something.
I think that's kind of the plan for, because like it's one of the, it's like Lord of the Rings, where like Lord of the Rings is eventually going to get another set down the line. And so like that's, yeah, that's the big thing is like, I'm so curious, like who's in this first wave of stuff? Cause like, I love the X-Men. I love Cap. I can think like the Avengers are obviously going to get cards and stuff, but like, that's a fair point. Cause like, it's a little daunting to see Matt Smith from Doctor Who on a card. I have no problem with Universes Beyond. Like, I think they're fine, and they get like, Lord of the Rings was huge for me. Like, I like Laz gives me tons of shit about it because I was brewing a new Lord of the Rings deck every other day. But like, I love the Lord of the Rings movies. Like, I read the books, and like, that's what I love. And so like, if it gets someone into this hobby, like, I'm all for it. I will say the Ikoria, they did the kind of comic booky art for some of the full, like, I really hope they bring, like, some artists who worked on that back, because, like, I love some of those arts. They're so good.
Like, I have a bunch of those Mutate cards that I can never get to stick in a deck, but the comic book art of them is fantastic.
I actually am taking the Volo deck I made, and I'm making it a Karuga companion, and then I'm sticking a bunch of those Mutate cards in there, because Volo can, like, double the Mutate. It's just, it's going to be stupid, but it's going
to
be fun.
And to your point about the, you know, like the Matt Smith and you know, David Tennant and stuff, it's not so much that I don't want real world people on it, because that's all there is for Doctor Who. Like, those characters were Doctor Who. So it's a little different, where it's like there isn't any other real reference for those people other than the actors that played them. So I'm okay with that. That totally makes sense. It's just that I don't, you know, the history of Marvel Comics has, like, you know, Spider-Man art-wise has existed for so long, not just Tobey Maguire or Tom Holland or something, which would probably be Tom Holland at this point. It's like, I don't want to see Tom Holland on my card. I just want Peter Parker, you know, or Spider-Man. And I do, and to your point too, I want some diversity in terms of, like, how far deep into the well they go. Like, yes, we're going to obviously get Cap, Thor, Iron Man, Spidey, probably a couple versions of them, you know, like a Hulkbuster and Iron, you know, so it's still just Iron Man. But, like, we'll probably get Wolverine because he's such a huge character. Deadpool, of course. But, like, I want Rogue. I want Blink. I want Darkhawk. You know, I want characters that aren't necessarily mainstream, but they're cool. And it seems like that's not unrealistic based off of, like, Lord of the Rings, Doctor Who, Fallout. Like, they've dug deep into the lore of most of those when making the cards and stuff. I mean, and I'll put this out right now. I don't see it because I'm so small, but please give me a preview card for Marvel set. Please, 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 please. Specifically something Spider-Man. You know, I will take an equipment that is a web shooter. That'd be freaking sick. I would love to premiere that.
Make it happen. We got to make it happen. We're going to start a Twitter trend for it. Yeah, I'm super excited for that. It's going to be a great set. Coming up very fast. I mean, next year is, like, flying. I can't believe it's already April. Yeah, that's really exciting. So there is a second portion of this show where we talk about a deck that you've put together, and it's kind of like your signature deck or your favorite deck. So why don't you introduce us here to this deck?
Sure. So we are looking at my Kemba Ka Regent deck.
So what kind of was the inspiration behind this deck? For those listening who don't know, Kemba Ka Regent is one white and a white for a cat cleric. And she says, at the beginning of your upkeep, create a 2/2 white cat creature token for each equipment attached to Kemba Ka Regent. And she is a 2/4.
So the thing is, I'm not 100% sure where I found her first, like what it was. Like, obviously, I love animals, I love dogs, but I'm a cat guy. So I was like, oh, cool. You know, a cat, I can make a cat deck. That's funny. You know, that's cool to me. And I honestly don't remember what triggered her specifically. I think it was just, I liked the idea that she could make more cats. And originally her design was just a ton of good cat creatures and a couple equipments. Cause I had no plans of making her a Voltron deck, as everyone calls it, which, side note, I hate that people call it a Voltron deck because it makes no sense. And have you watched Voltron? It's not one robot getting 15,000 guns and swords. It's five robots coming together to form one robot. So it's like, that's not what Voltron does. So how is that a Voltron deck? I mean, I guess other than things coming together, okay, but that's, I'm not even sure what it should be called, but it's like you're taking a tank and then you're putting a minigun on it and then a rocket launcher and something else. That's awesome as hell, but that's not Voltron. That's just a nerdy pet peeve of mine. But over time, after playing her for a while, I realized that, okay, the strength is giving her a ton of equipment. And so I kept dialing back the number of actual cat creatures in the deck and trying to make her better. But it's just fun that, you know, to focus on her for the commander damage. So it's about getting her not just powerful equipment so that she's high power and toughness, but getting her the equipment that lets her sneak through unblockable. And so it's like almost a guaranteed hit. So maybe she's only an 8 something and it's still going to be 3 hits, but they're going to get through, as opposed to, oh, cool, she's like a 17 something but you know, she doesn't have trample, she doesn't have flying, so you can just chump block her.
Yeah, and I think she does something that, like, I think a lot of good Voltron commanders do, where even after she attacks or anything, she gives yourself a board presence so that on the crackback, you're protected. I think like Lathrul, Blade of Elves, like you get the number of elves equal to the damage dealt. So if you build a Voltron deck with her, you're at least getting some blockers out of it. This is on upkeep, but even then, like, 2/2 white cat creature tokens and the amount of like anthem effects that are in the deck, like, it's not really 2/2 cat creatures. It's suddenly like some 5/5s or 6/6s that are staring people in the face after getting smacked for 17 damage. So yeah.
And that's part of it too, because you know she's going to be the target. So if you can't protect her with any kind of hexproof or whatever, you just got to get to your upkeep. You make 3 2/2s. She gets blown up before, you know, when you go to combat. But like you said, you've got a couple of those buff creatures or anthems out, and it's like, well, yeah, but they're 4/4s, 5/5s, whatever. So they can swing in and take somebody out or block and keep me alive till I can recast Kemba.
Any moments really stick out to you from this deck? Like any moments in game where you were like, you pulled a sneaky win or anything like that?
Yeah, actually. So last year, it was the first time I ever did any kind of Magic conventions. And I went to the Star City Games Baltimore Command Fest. And I was playing Kemba, and it was like some decent guys. And so this game particularly, the one guy's friend had come in from playing like competitive stuff. And he said, okay, I'll join. But he didn't have any decks. So his friend gave him like a very strong deck. And I'm like, okay, well, we didn't, you know, why'd you give him the strongest deck? And then he himself had a good deck. And the third opponent was kind of like me, where I was like, yeah, Kemba's really good, but it's not like CDH level or something. So the game's going on. We're desperately trying to deal with the friend who had come from competitive while also dealing with his buddy, who was slightly less the threat. It comes down to me and the person that was coming from competitive. I had Kemba out. He'd already had some damage. His health was low. I was really low. This was probably my last turn. She had some decent equipments on her, but nothing crazy, and he had blockers. But I had Armored Skyhunter out, which is a 3/3 flyer, and it says whenever a Skyhunter attacks, look at the top 6 cards of your library. You put an aura or equipment card from them onto the battlefield. If an equipment is put onto the battlefield this way, you may attach it to a creature you control, put the rest on the bottom in any order. So I'm like, oh, I don't really think I can win, but I might as well go swinging. I'm like, okay, I swing everything at you. And he's like, okay, cool. Well, don't forget your Armored Skyhunter trigger, which I had totally forgotten. And I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah. Look at the top, because he was going to be able to block the Skyhunter, I think, and Kemba. And in the top 6 was Trailblazer Boots. And I'm like, oh, yeah, Trailblazer Boots. And he's like, that'll do it. So I put it on her. She had non-basic land walk, and she got in for just enough damage to kill him, and I won the game.
That is a sweet victory right there. I like that, yeah.
And I told him, I'm like, yeah, you probably shouldn't have reminded me. He's like, no, cool. Like, I don't care. That was a good win.
It's always nice when an opponent, like, you know, they don't go for like the cheat, like not cheaty, but like not reminding you of something that's like, it's good sportsmanship. I like that. I do see that you have the most recent Kemba, Ka Enduring. Have you ever considered swapping commanders, or has Kemba Ka Regent always been the one?
She's always been the one. Like, and I also now have a really awesome Modfly altar of her, where to tie into other hobbies, I love anime, and one of my all-time favorites is Outlaw Star. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but there's it's like an outer spacey cowboy, almost like Cowboy Bebop, only a little more lighthearted. And one of the characters is from a cat race, and her name's Aisha Clan Clan. So the altar is Aisha Clan Clan instead of for Kemba. So now it's a forever deck for sure, and she's always going to be the commander. But for Ka Enduring, she's good because, you know, she's the 2/2 that says whenever she or another cat enters the battlefield, you can attach one target equipment to it, and she gives equipped creatures +1/+1, and for 5 mana, you can make a 2/2 white cat creature token. But I would have to either bounce her to get her a bunch of stuff, and then you can still only do one at a time. You know, like, I couldn't, like, other cats coming in get the same effect, which is cool. But then I'd have to equip everything. which would work. I mean, every, you know, 15 different creatures with all kinds of different equipment would be interesting. But that would also kind of be a bit of a nightmare to keep track of. Like, okay, this 2/2 cat is getting a plus this from the sword. This one's getting, you know, Trailblazer boots, so it's unblockable.
Yeah, that would definitely be a little bit hard to keep up with sometimes, for sure. So you have a nice list of 34 artifacts in this deck. Do you have a favorite equipment from among them? Because there's one I'd like to talk about real quick, because I've never seen this card, but it fits so well here. It's a Khanda's Banner. It's a 2 generic for a legendary artifact equipment. It can only be attached to a legendary creature. It gives creatures that share a color with the equipped creature +1/+1, and creatures that share a creature type with the equipped creature +1/+1, and has equipped 2. I've never seen this card, but it got my mind racing. And Cranko, 10 Street Kingpin, the one that's like, when you put a +1/+1 and you make goblins, I was like, oh, that'd be great in that. And I was like, oh, there's like tons of like just mono colored like Voltron-y commanders that like this would just be amazing in.
Or just even kindred commanders, as long as it's like, you know, elves, goblins, everything. Because as long as the commander is the same races or whatever of the rest of them. And what's cool about the Khanda's Banner is that, and it's a weird thing, you don't think of it, but I know I've had a couple of judge friends like say, yeah, no, it works that way. Because your commander shares a creature type and color with itself. So Kemba gets those buffs. It's not just giving them to the tokens, it's giving them to her. So just equipping that gives her a +2/+2.
Is there a favorite art equipment that you have?
And I do. I absolutely do. And it's so weird, but it's a Trailblazer's Boots. Because Trailblazer's Boots, say, equipped creature has non-basic landwalk. It's a 2 drop and it equips for 2. And the thing is, even against monocolor decks, you're going to have, what, a Rogue's Passage, a Reliquary Tower. It's almost always going to be effective against somebody. And when you're dealing commander damage, you know, you need that. It's like, it'd be useless in a go wide deck. But when you're focusing on like infect or commander damage, it just goes through. There's nothing they can do. And if nothing else, it gives them another target for removal as opposed to the commander itself. Because they're like, well, if I can blow up the boots, I can chump block for days. So cool, now I don't have to recast my commander. I just lose a 2/2 or a 2 drop artifact.
Trailblazer's Boots, I think, is like it needs to see more play. Because I feel like a lot of people don't put it in. They just, they're like, oh. But like, it, I mean, in the meta that we all play in, like, yeah, there is a bunch of non-basics. Like, there's dual type lands that don't have it. So yeah. Very, very strong equipment indeed.
Yeah, I made a opinion based, but it was a 3, you know, one of those top 3 underrated equipments in Magic, and I had Trailblazer Boots like absolutely was part of it, because it's, I don't see it, and I don't understand why I don't see it as much.
I think this is a little bit of a pet card for you, but I want to talk about it. The love you have for Bonner's Ornament. Let's talk about it. Bonner's Ornament.
Yeah, that was another one in that thing. I don't understand, outside of CEDH, the hate for 3-drop mana rocks. I don't get it. You know, everyone's like, if it's not 1 or 0, it's garbage, or 2. It's like, why? It's, you know, 3 mana to get a Bonner's Ornament, or any of them really, but Bonner's Ornament taps for 1 of any color. So it's mana fixing. You know, it fixes if you got 2, 3 colors. It helps. And then you pay 4 and tap it, and each player who controls a permanent named Bonner's Ornament draws a card. And since no one plays it, they all refuse, I'm the only one drawing cards off of it. If everyone played it, then everyone could benefit. You know? But it's like, and I get it, you're paying 4 mana to tap it. Yes, of course. Under normal circumstances, you're not going to want to use it. You're going to want it for better things. There's better draw spells and things. But for me, it's a fail-safe. It's, oh crap, I'm drawing lands, I've got nothing to play. Well, I've got nothing to play, and we're 7 turns in, so I got 7 mana. Cool, I'll spend 4 of it to take a chance and hopefully get something that gives me some gas. But it is a bit of a pet, you know, pet card obsession that I talk about a little too much.
I remember you played it in a game we played, I think it was in like your Animar deck, and I was like, what is this card? Like, what are you playing? But I'm now going to like secretly tech it into a bunch of my decks. And so whenever we play games together, I also don't get the hate for 3 mana rocks. There's some amazing ones out there, like Curse Mirror gives you a free hasty Eldrazi if someone's playing Eldrazi. So I love that stuff. Yeah, things like that.
One mana of any color, and you have no maximum hand size. It's a nice little failsafe if someone's trying to make you draw your deck or whatever. It's like, I don't get it.
Any other pet cards in the deck you wanted to give a little shout out to? I will say another card I never see too many people play is Gift of Estates. It just seems like a really good sorcery that I don't feel like anyone ever plays. Gift of Estates is one in a white. If an opponent controls more lands than you, search your library for up to three planes cards, reveal them, and put them into your hands, then shuffle. Kind of like a miniature land tax, but like really nice. I mean,
for just a two drop, and one of the reasons, like the main reason it's in there is because white isn't, you know, one of the notorious decks for not doing well with lands, you know, white and red, right? You can't, if it's obviously green, if you splash green and everything, that way you have your access to ramp. But that was one of the major drawbacks of Kemba, is that she just would not get the lands fast enough to play more than maybe one spell a turn. And if I did, and with the equipment, I could play the equipment, but I could never equip it that same turn. And so friends started telling me, like, well, try, you know, make sure you have Sword of the Animus, make sure you have land tax. And even though, you know, land tax was relatively expensive, so I was waiting on that one, but I finally put one in and things like that. Every card that I can find that helps get me a planes faster with a decent, and 2 for 3 is a pretty decent, you know, as long as you're not going first, you almost always have someone else with more lands. So it can catch you up pretty quick.
For sure. So yeah, I like this deck. I really want to play against it someday. I was excited when you sent me the list and I started going through it. I was like, oh, okay, I see what he's doing here. And it's so Voltron for me has been something I've like stepped away from because I made a SRAM Senior Artificer deck. It started out as Lightpaw's Auras and I didn't like it. And so then I shifted to SRAM and I played it like 3 times at a Command Fest I was at, and I won all 3 games, and I felt terrible because like I was just beating people's face in. So I was like, I think I'm done with Voltron for a little bit. Like, I don't really want to do that. But it's a archetype that like I'm wanting to start playing again. Like, I've been looking at like Kellan Feyblooded and like other kind of weird Voltron-y people, like a Lord of Tressorhorn. Rachel Weeks has been playing that on some games lately that I've been really like, okay, maybe this would be a fun deck to play. So okay, that's a question for you. So like, do you ever feel like, does it ever feel bad playing this deck as like a quote unquote Voltron deck, and like if you have to take someone out early?
Well, 2 things off of that then. I don't feel too bad playing it because she doesn't win as often as I would like her to, because she, you know, being a commander damage deck, it's easy to stop because you just blow up the commander 2-3 times and she gets too expensive to cast and re-equip. So you got to be fast about it. And mono white isn't super fast. So it's a threat, and everyone takes advantage of it. And as soon as I get a couple equipments, they target it. But which is why I've tried to skew a little bit more of the Hexproof and Shroud cards in there in an effort to keep her around longer, but then that lowers her power and toughness because I'm taking out like the swords to get cloaks and stuff in to protect her. And as for taking someone out early, unless they're blatantly the threat, to my detriment, I like to just go around the table. I don't focus as I should because I've been on the receiving end of going first out of a game and then sitting on my hands for the next 45 minutes. And I don't like that. And I don't want to put anyone through that. We're supposed to be having fun. So I will, you know, hit you, then hit someone else, then hit the third person, and then come back to you. Unless someone is going away with the game, then I'll be like, okay, well, I got to shift gears and slow them down. So she's not super, I just don't play her that way. So I don't often have to feel bad about it unless it's super early. And there was one recent game, I believe it was Kemba, and the other person was just going crazy. It was a really good deck, and they were just going off early through, like, nothing against them. They just had a really good draws, and they were going off. And I got her up decent enough that I hit them once, and on my second attempt, second hit, I was going to be able to hit max commander damage and take them out. And it came around and we're all joking. It's like, well, Brian's going to have to take you out. And I'm like, I really don't want to, but I think I kind of have to. And she's like, you absolutely have to take me out because I'm just going to rebuild. Like, someone did board wipe her basically, but I'm going to rebuild really fast. So you should take me out. And I'm like, okay. And it was like early half of the game, but they were good natured about it.
Someone who's like, understands like, oh yeah, I'm the threat. Like definitely take me out. But yeah. I think that's like, I felt I was running into too many games where it's like, I killed someone early. And like, I think it also just probably on me a little bit. Cause like SRAM Senior Artificer is insane. Like he's card draw for 2 mana. And I think maybe that's the issue is like, I should really go for more like niche Voltron commanders who are doing like kind of crazy things, not, you know, just pure beat down trying to kill somebody. So, but yeah.
I do tend to like, my two playstyles seem to be indirect damage, like Shieldred and Modane, where it's like, I don't care about combat. I'm just firing damage other ways at you, and commander damage, because I built two of them off of the Doctor Who. I have the third Doctor, which I really love, and me, the Immortal. And they're both meant to be commander damage wins. Completely different versions, but it still makes it difficult because you're relying on one creature, and it's just too easy to get that taken out and stopped. So you got to be careful about how you build them.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to say about the deck before we start to wrap up the show?
Not really. It is definitely my top two. I love it. And it's definitely a forever deck. It's not going away.
All right. Well, hey, that was Brian's Kemba Ka Regent deck. A lot of fun. Definitely check it out. It'll be in the link below. It'll be in the description below with a link. Brian, thank you so much for coming on and doing this with me. This was a lot of fun. It was great to get to know you a little bit more. We've chatted a few times. Plug away. Whatever you want to plug. You just recently hit Twitch affiliate, so congrats on that.
Thank you. And thank you to the amazing MTG community that we were talking about earlier, because that I would have never gotten it in under 2 weeks. Like, if that was what, start to finish, it was like 6 days, because they were on there watching to give me the 3 average views. They got me the 50 subscribers or followers or whatever. So big thank you to everyone that helped out. As for, you know, plugging away, please go check out my YouTube channel, The Unskilled Commander. Subscribe, check out all the different, I have comedy skits that are worth a chuckle, some deck techs and some other stuff. I have what I call high octane, where I take some of the decks that are capable of doing it and seeing just how fast they could possibly win a game if they had the stacked 7 cards and next 10 cards. It's really fun to thought experiment to see just if you perfect windfall, how fast could you take out an entire table of opponents? Follow me on Twitch. I don't do a ton of streaming, but I do plan on doing multiple charity streams throughout the year. And my first one is coming up. You are going to be a part of it. And it is on April 27th, Saturday, from noon to midnight Eastern Standard Time. I have 6 pods, 18 guests. We're going to be playing Commander all day. It's going to be for the Trevor Project, which is a great cause. It's going to be a blast. I have a bunch of incentives lined up for funny little things like $15 donation. I can wear this wig. I'll wear this mask, you know, $30 donation. I wear this onesie for 30 minutes. All kinds of stupid stuff, but you get to, you know, impact how well I can see the game that I'm trying to play through the masks and stuff. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I really want it to be a success. So please tune in on Saturday. Donate if you can. Even just $5 is all I'm really asking. You know, that can add up real quick. So just keep your eyes open for that.
Yeah, and we'll have links to all that down in the description below. So definitely check out Brian. He's an amazing guy. He's like, can't say enough like how, like, we talked about a little bit before the show, like, when we first met each other and like you talking about like, you know, doing this all for charity and all that, it was very like, okay, this guy is a good person. And so you deserve all the support in the world. So,
well, I appreciate that very much. And thanks for having me on. This was a lot of fun.
All right, folks, if you want to reach out to me and Laz, you can find us on Twitter at @BrewItOrScrewIt, Instagram at @BrewItOrScrewItMTG. We have a Facebook group, just search up @BrewItOrScrewIt. It's been popping off lately. A lot of people talking in there. As always, if you can support us monetarily, we have a merch store with lots of funny shirts on there and our logo is on there. If you can't, just liking, following, sharing the podcast with a friend, it helps us out a ton. Let us know what you think about Brewer's Choice, because this is episode 1 and it's I was a little nervous, but like, I think it was a great episode.
Yeah. I mean, it was a lot of fun to do. I think it'd be, you know, I hope it'd be fun to listen to.
All right. We always do this like bit, and my editor's like, is this a bit y'all are doing? But like, it's always like, oh, I don't think of an outro for the show until the like show is going on. but the idea is like, it's the Brewer's Choice. I sent you the picture is like a coffee cup. So yeah. I guess we'll like do a cheers. So we'll just cheers.
Okay. Cheers.